Our next speaker is Matt Solt, who's going to be telling us about muography, which is the intersection between particle physics and archaeology.
All right, thank you. Yep, my name is Matt, and I'm a postdoc at University of Virginia. And I'm excited to tell you all about muography. So I should start with a disclaimer that I'm not an expert in archaeology or even muography. My connection here is actually I'm nominally a dark matter person, and it turns out that the similar dark matter detectors we use are very similar to the muon detectors that we also use, which are pretty similar to the ones we use for this concept that we call muography. And the reason I bring this to this group is because this is a very interdisciplinary topic, and this is a very interdisciplinary group. So I want to make this this group aware of this idea, so that hopefully we can further these applications of muography. All right. So the story sort of begins in 2017, just 6 years ago. The Scan Pyramid collaboration claimed a discovery of a big void within the Great Pyramid. And they were able to do this through a concept called cosmic ray muography, which I'll explain in a little bit. But basically, this uses cosmic rays that come from the upper atmosphere that penetrates deep structures, and you can actually detect these muons at the surface and draw conclusions about the interior of a pyramid, or really any structure. So this actually has a much deeper history. Actually, the first attempt of imaging pyramids with muography started with Luis Alvarez in 1970. He's actually a Nobel laureate and was also related in to the Manhattan Project. I mentioned that because there's, of course, a renewed interest in that recently. And he actually imaged the second largest pyramid. He didn't do the Great Pyramid. And he found no unexpected voids. And then, as I just mentioned, in 2017, this Scan Pyramid project claimed to discover this grand gallery. And because of this, because this was such an interesting find, the Egyptian Ministry of Antiquities requested a proposal for a follow-up study. And the follow-up study is called the Explore the Grand Pyramid Project, or EGP. And that's what I'll build up to in this talk. So some quick details about this Great Pyramid for those who don't know. It was basically built in the 26th century BC. It was 147 meters high when it was built. However, it shrank a little bit. And it remained the tallest building for several millennia until 1311. It's made up of about 2.5 million blocks that are 1 cubic meter in size each. It's made up of mostly limestone with some granites. And of course, there's many open questions to this pyramid. Specifically, what is the full internal structure? Because nowadays, when you want to probe the internal structure of a pyramid, it's frowned upon to just use dynamite like they used to do back in the day. There's also questions in how it was built, or even if humans built it. So these are open questions for this type of project. Okay, so we'll build up to there, and I think we'll take a major step back for a general audience. And first, I'll tell you what a muon is, and then I'll tell you a lot more information than you wanted to know about muons before we get to how we actually use them to image. So we're pretty much all familiar with the periodic table, which has all the elements, and each element has its own atom, like this. And an atom is basically a positively charged nucleus surrounded by electrons. And each nuclei is made up of a series of protons and neutrons. Now, this is the point at which chemistry classes stop and particle physics sort of begins. It turns out it's been known for some time that protons and neutrons are made up of more fundamental particles called quarks. And that leads to the standard model of particle physics, which classifies all the known particles here. And really, the periodic table, or all elements, are made up of three main fundamental particles, basically the up quark, the down quark, and the electron. But in particle physics, we know that there's a lot more particles, and one of the particles is a muon. So muons were discovered in 1936 from cosmic rays, which I'll explain in a bit. And the discovery was so shocking that at the time, a Nobel laureate famously said, "Who ordered that?" Muons are second generation elementary particles. So this is the first generation here, second generation here, and third generation here. They're a part of the Standard Model, as I said, but they're actually not a part of the periodic table. So they don't, they're not involved in making up elements. But because they're basically a second generation electron, they effectively behave just like an electron, but they have 200 times the mass. And the last important feature of a muon is that they're actually not stable. Typically, second and third generation particles are not stable. They decay down to first generation particles, which in the correct combination are in fact stable. And in fact, they only last about 2.2 millionths of a second on average. So because of that, you can't just stumble upon a pile of muons and be able to and expect to be able to use them for study. But they do have to come from somewhere. And where do they come from? Well, it turns out you can produce them through particle collisions. And there's two main sources. The first are cosmic rays. Basically, there's a bunch of particles coming from space, either the sun or more violent stellar activity like supernova, that collide in the upper atmosphere. And this creates a shower of exotic particles, such as pions and kaons, which are another class of particles. And these also don't survive. They decay to other particles like electrons, neutrinos, and muons. And these muons last just long enough that many of them reach Earth's surface, as shown here. You can also produce muon at particle accelerators, producing collisions from, say, in this example, protons on some target, which also produces the same secondary particles which decay to muons that you can use in study for particle physics experiments. And as an example here, I show the Fermilab muon campus, which if you were at the ASA conference a few years ago, some of you may have taken the Fermilab tour and actually seen the muon campus from above Wilson Hall. Basically, they produce muons and send these muons to different experiments for study of fundamental physics. So a few more details about muons. Besides their discovery, muons are used as a tool for discovery themselves in the field of particle physics. So I mentioned the muon campus previously. These are basically the two experiments there. The first one on the left is the famous Fermilab muon G-2 experiment. Basically, what they do is measure the wobble of a muon. So muons have an intrinsic wobble. And you can also calculate this wobble. And it turns out that there's a pretty strong disagreement between experiment and theory at the 4 sigma deviation. So that sort of implies extra particles and forces beyond the Standard Model. And it turns out in just less than 2 weeks, the G-2 experiment will release their latest results. And I don't have any insider knowledge, but I suspect they might get to 5 sigma discovery in a few weeks. The second type of experiment looks at muon decays. And this is called the mu to e experiment. Basically, what they do is they create muons and trap them into atoms and wait for them to decay. And you can actually measure the decay products. And there's certain types of rare decays that aren't allowed by the Standard Model that if you do measure them, this implies extra particles or forces, such as example here, this is what's called a supersymmetric particle. Details aren't important. The point is that muons can themselves be a tool for discovery beyond pyramids as well. Unfortunately, muons are also a nuisance for many fundamental physics experiments. And I give two examples here. The first are dark matter direct detection experiments, which are extremely sensitive. And basically, they can be overwhelmed by muons if they're done on Earth's surface. So in order to mitigate this, what you have to do is bury these detectors deep, a mile underground. And as you'll see, muons are very penetrating particles. So that's why you have to get so deep in the Earth in order to filter out these cosmic ray muons. And the second example is what I work on. This is the cosmic ray veto for the mu2e experiment. So the same experiment as the previous slide. Basically, one of the major backgrounds of this experiment, or something that can fake a signal, is exterior muons entering the experimental hull And you can't really shield that, those besides burying the experiment deep underground, which is quite costly. So what we do is build this cosmic ray veto device and surround much of the experimental hull and track all the muons entering the experimental hull so that we can actually reject them in our measurement. And for scale, you can see a person here, so you can kind of see the size of this experiment. So I mentioned this because this is effectively the same type of detector that's going to be used in the EGP project, as you'll see. All right, so now that I described more than you probably wanted to know about muons, I'll describe how we actually use them for imaging. And I think we're pretty much all familiar with the concept, even if we don't know it. It basically has to do with imaging from absorption, which is quite simple. Basically, what you need is some particle source, some object of interest that you're interested in measuring, and some particle detector. And that object will absorb some particles and let other particles go through. And the number of particles it absorbs depends on the size of the object and the density of the object. So making that measurement gives you an idea of that. And we're all familiar with this from medical applications, mainly an X-ray source, where you have an X-ray here, which is basically just a mini particle accelerator that shoots X-rays at a person. Bones are more dense, of course, so they'll absorb more X-rays. Tissue is less dense, they'll transmit more X-rays, and you can have a detector below or some sort of film, and you can actually see the internal structure of a human being based on this mechanism. It's the exact same concept with what we call muography, where we use muons to actually image internal structure. So this is a good example I found on the web here. So basically, there's this water tower. And the question this paper poses is which image does the water tower actually contain water? So basically what you do is you aim a muon telescope at this water tower. And on this picture here, yellow means you observe more muons and blue means you observe less muons. So first you can actually see the structure of the tower itself because the tower is made up of concrete and will, of course, absorb some muons. And second, you can actually see in this picture here that this tower contains water because water is going to absorb more muons than the case where the tower is empty. So this is a clear application of using muons via absorption to actually measure the internal structure of something quite dense. So you might be wondering, for this process, why do we use muons? Why not any of the other particles I previously showed? So it turns out muons have unique properties that make them ideal for this type of imaging. One, they can penetrate deeply into matter. For example, here, I mentioned previously that they're producing cosmic rays, but there's a lot of other particles produced in these cosmic rays, neutrons, electrons, gammas, et cetera. So typically those are absorbed in the atmosphere, and they would also be absorbed in some object of interest, say a pyramid, pretty quickly because they're not very penetrative. However, muons and another particle called neutrinos can actually penetrate deeply through structure. But why can't you use a particle called neutrinos? Well, it turns out they're electrically neutral, and they very, very rarely interact with matter. So most neutrinos actually go right through the Earth and don't interact with anything at all. Muons, however, have an electric charge, much like electrons. And when they pass through matter, they leave just enough energy that they can easily be detected. So muons have these unique properties where they can both penetrate through matter and leave a trail so that they can actually be detected. And third, they're also non-invasive. And this is important because typically the objects of interest, you don't want to ruin their internal structure. And it's non-invasive because it uses the naturally occurring muons in the upper atmosphere. And so the basic principle of this pyramid measurement that I began my talk with is these cosmic ray muons coming from the atmosphere penetrate deeply into this pyramid, and you have some sort of muon detector below, and you measure the absorption And what they observed is less absorption than they expected, which the conclusion from that is that there's something, there's a hidden chamber, there's some empty space there. So this talk is gonna focus on absorption, but I just really wanna quickly mention another type of muon imaging that involves scattering. So basically, muons, when they go through matter, they scatter. And the more matter they go through, the more they scatter. So if you can measure this scattering angle, you can actually, with higher resolution, tell more about this internal structure than simply just absorption. An example here is of nuclear waste, because uranium is quite dense. But the drawback of this type of imaging is that you have to have two detectors, both on either side, and you have to be able to tell a single muon that goes through these detectors. All right, so now that we have a basic understanding of muography and how to use muons for imaging, I want to touch on the really broad applications of muography that are summarized in this picture here. So I mentioned the pyramids, but really any historical building can be imaged. This has been applied to geological processes like or objects like volcanoes and glaciers, which are also very dense objects that require something like a muon to penetrate through. It's all other geological applications are used for mineral exploration and stuff like that. And there's also infrastructure applications for bridges and dams. There's applications to nuclear reactors, and this was actually applied to the Fukushima disaster. Muography was used to actually tell where the nuclear core of that reactor was, because uranium is quite dense, it leaves a very clear signal. It can also be applied to carbon storage. Basically, if you collect carbon out of the atmosphere and put it in the ground, you want to make sure that it stays there, and muography can be used to detect that. And the last thing I'm going to mention is cargo scanning from ships for national security. If you're interested in seeing if a ship has some nuclear material that they're not supposed to, you can use muography for that. And this has been realized in a small part within the private sector as well. And I have a non-inclusive list of private companies that I'm not whatsoever affiliated with. And so there's a list of companies here and their applications that they use there as well. Right. All right, so I mentioned the applications of muography. Now, how do we actually detect the muons themselves? And as I mentioned earlier, muons have a charge. And when a charged particle moves through matter, it ionizes it. And this can be detected. And there are several different types of muon detectors that can exploit this mechanism. And for interest of time, I think I'll just mention these last two here. So here's what we call a scintillator. Basically, when a charged particle or muon goes through, it ionizes, and this produces photons like this. And you can have a photodetector that detects those photons, and you can tell when a charged particle traverses this medium here. So a photodetector is a fancy word for a camera. And the one on the right is sort of a slightly more complicated case of the one in the middle. Basically, this is the same thing with a scintillator on the outside, but this is embedded with what we call a wavelength shifting fiber, which basically picks up the light and traps the light and sends the light out towards the ends, which can also be picked up by some photodetector. And I mentioned this technology specifically because this is what we're going to use for the EGP measurements. All right, so at the University of Virginia, we actually build these counters, or as we call them counters, these scintillators with wavelength shifting fibers. And I just want to real quickly show you some pictures of what that looks like. So this is a cross-section of one of these scintillators that I showed previously, these guys, which come from Fermilab's NICAD facility. And these come extruded with holes in them. And that's so that you can put these wavelength shifting fibers in. And this is a picture of what these fibers look like in a spool. And what we do with these scintillators is sort of glue them together into these, what we call die counters, that look something like this. And these are the sort of fundamental units for what these detectors look like. Now these are for the MeeDoE cosmic ray VITO I mentioned previously. And this same idea is gonna be used for EGP. The only exception, and this is a bit more technical, is that we're gonna use these triangular shaped counters, which actually improves the hit resolution. And I like this picture down here because this is this shows actually these wavelength shifting fibers. They kind of glow green. So basically when a muon passes through one of these scintillators, there's a flash of green light. And this flash of green light can be picked up by these guys here on the left, basically what we call a silicon photomultiplier, which is sort of a fancy CCD that you have in your camera that can pick up this light and see a muon going through a detector. Okay, and the last thing I'll show on this part is these are one of our fully formed, what we call modules for the MeeDoE CRB. And here's an example of an actual event in our test stand where a muon traverses this detector and it lights up as shown here in blue, and you can actually compute where a muon travels through this type of detector. All right, so now that we have a basic understanding of how muon detection works, let's turn our attention towards the actual EGP projects, or exploring the Great Pyramid project. So this project will scan the entire interior of the Great Pyramid using cosmic ray cosmic ray muons. And these will use much larger detectors than the Scan Pyramid project that I showed at the beginning of my talk, and with much greater precision. And this will enable the creation of a detailed 3D image of the entire internal structure of the pyramid in about 2 years' time. So how the detectors look is shown up here in the upper right. So basically there are these cargo containers, and you have these scintillating bars here, vertical in this direction, horizontal in this direction, and you have eight in a single array. So you can actually track muons that go through these detectors that have gone through the pyramid. And these eight containers will be moved around this pyramid every few months. And it'll take about 2 years for these detectors to go all the way around the pyramid so that you can compute an actual topographical image of what's inside the pyramid. So it's not built yet, but we do have some preliminary simulations. And I'll show you what these look like. So on the left is some assumed internal structure of the pyramid. So we have what's known, the King's Chamber, the Grand Gallery, and the Queen's Chamber. We have simulated the supposed big void that was discovered here. And then there's been hints of a hypothetical second King's Chamber all the way up at the top. And you can see simulation results here. You can clearly see from these muons where these voids are in the pyramid, as shown in this bright yellow. And I will say this is a very preliminary simulation. There's a lot that can be improved with these topographic algorithms to construct even higher resolution images. So the status of this project is the detector design is in fact finalized. It's what I showed here, these triangular counters. These counters have been actually tested in a Fermilab test beam facility, and these preliminary simulations have been run. And so we're effectively ready to start building and hopefully taking data pretty soon, although there's no clear timeline at the moment, but we do have funding for it. In addition, we're gonna do something similar to the El Castillo in temple at Chichen Itza, which will also be imaged using this method and very similar muon detectors. The only real difference is that this detector can actually be placed inside the pyramid because there's access there. And similar questions that EGP can answer will also be answered with this project. All right, so the last thing I wanna mention before I close is some things to consider when applying muography. So I brought this to the group because this is, as you can see, very interdisciplinary, and a lot of people aren't aware of this. And it's very underutilized. So there's many potential applications that are relevant to topics of interest in the ASA, even directly from EGP. Egyptology does have some biblical implications, obviously. But this can also be applied to geology, other forms of archaeology, and either even environmental questions. Because really, all you need is some sort of structure of interest. You need your cosmic ray muons, which are naturally produced, and you need some sort of muon detector that can potentially detect these cosmic rays. So when considering how to apply this, how to apply muography, I found a really nice paper that's mostly focused on geological questions that have 9 questions to consider before using this process. And I won't go over all these in interest of time. The main ones I want to focus on are the major bottleneck, which I think is the technological accessibility. Unfortunately, you do need the physics expertise of these detectors in order to get this measurement to work. And the demand for this expertise outweighs the supply in this case. Yes, there's several other things to consider as well. One thing I don't see here in these 9 questions, which is of course always important to consider, is funding and money. So who is gonna pay for these types of measurements? Anyway, so I'll wrap up. So since their surprising discovery in 1936, muons have themselves been used as a tool for discovery. So in addition to that, muons can be used in a process that we call muography that can be used to image dense and thick objects. And there's a very broad application to muography. And these applications have actually existed for several decades, even though these are relatively smaller scale experiments. And despite the broad applications, muography is currently underutilized as a technique in a variety of fields, which leaves plenty of opportunity for future applications that span many disciplines. So with that, I'll wrap up and be happy to take some questions this time.
Yeah, so thanks for your talk. Louis Alvarez was one of my mentors, and I remember him talking about trying this, and his resolution was not very good, spatial resolution. But I vaguely remember that they had tried acoustic measurements of the pyramid, looking at reflections from sound waves. And I don't remember the pros and cons. Would you happen to know?
I don't know off the top of my head. I've heard rumors of other methods to try and image the pyramid. And there's definitely, as listed here, synergies that you can do with other types of measurements like that to see if they're in agreement or disagreement. I don't know the details of the pros and cons of that mechanism.
Hey, thanks so much for the talk. Quick question, are there any hypotheses on what the Egyptians might have created the extra chambers for?
That's a good question. So yeah, I'm not an archaeologist, so I don't know. So there's debates within the community about what that can mean. And I think they're far from that, that's far from being settled. In addition, not everyone's convinced that they actually found a hidden chamber there. So there's actually debate on that as well. But this experiment should be able to at least definitively tell what the internal structure is for structures that are at least 3 meters large. In terms of, why the Egyptians would do that, I think it's just historical speculation. Yeah.
Very interesting talk. Thank you very much. If you have a void in the middle of that pyramid structure and you have these cosmic rays coming from the top, they're going to hit limestone at the top and then limestone at the bottom, right? How come they don't get absorbed in those sections and kind of just get black at the end on the detectors? How do you get through those sections that are dense as well?
So some do get absorbed and some get transmitted, and there's a probability here. And the probability is related to the density of the material and how much goes through. So yeah, when it goes through the limestone, some muons get absorbed. And some transmit all the way through, but when it hits that empty space, all those muons go through. So there's sort of this loss of material there, and you can detect that loss of material by observing more muons than you expect, given the hypothesis that all that should be limestone, essentially.
So I'd like to use my privileges chair to ask this. It seems that what would be of greatest interest to this group and many other people is using this method to in and around the Jerusalem area to discern things like Solomon's temple and that kind of thing. Is there any discussion of that?
I haven't seen any in the field, so that's one of the reasons why I bring it to this group. I think it could be quite useful in that regard. So in terms of applications, all you need is just a muon detector, but you have to have a way to get that muon detector underneath the object of interest.
You'd have to get it to go through, but that would certainly be of great interest.
Right.
Anyway, let's thank Matt again for what I think is the most elaborate pyramid scheme I've ever heard of.